Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Now, streaming live on the Marijuana Agenda.
Oh, gnarly. What are you people? On dope?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio.
Hey, this is great, man.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
Marijuana is listed as a Schedule 1 drug. That is absurd.
Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Hey, man. Am I driving okay?
Toker Talk Radio is your chance to make your voice heard in the marijuana nation.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
Send that message with clarity that good people don't smoke marijuana.
Now let's get to Toking and Talking with your host, Russ Belville.
Welcome back, everybody. Glad to have you here on a beautiful Friday in Portland, Oregon, where it is hot outside. Yeah, it's cool in here. We got air conditioning at Delta 9 House and Studios, but it is hot outside. And speaking of Delta 9, we got some new swag for Delta 9 House, and I like this card because of the green on it. You can see through the... through our green screen, but we got new cards for Delta 9 House. If you are interested in coming to the Portland area to experience legal marijuana, please get online to Airbnb. You can find us at indica.delta9.house. That's D-E-L-T-A number 9. Indica.delta9.house and sativa.delta9.house. We have two different rooms, both with queen beds, locking doors so you can have your privacy, empty closets. You can put your stuff up if you want. We've got a beautiful, spacious, immaculate bathroom with dual sinks and a tub shower. We got air conditioning. We got cable, HBO, high-speed Wi-Fi. Did I mention we have marijuana and we have a dab station? We got all the stuff you need. We got a pot shop 6 blocks away. We got 4 chickens in the backyard. We got breakfast in the morning. Folks, summertime is happening, and these rooms are going to go quick. So if you want to head out here and watch me do this show live, you can check out our studio even. Sign up now. You can find our Facebook page at delta9.house or delta9house.com. All right. As we start off the show today, interesting note that I got coming across the wires. I still have wires. I'm old school, right? From Cointelegraph.com. And these guys are all about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, right? So it's a blog for this Bitcoin stuff, which I don't entirely understand, but I do know basics of what it is. Cryptocurrency is you are basically buying a secret password. And your secret password is this big long key, this big long encryption code. And there is monetary value assigned to that. And it's stateless and it's open source kind of thing where, I don't know if open source is the right term, but it's a stateless sort of cryptocurrency where no government controls it. And it's all, its value is determined by everybody who's participating in this Bitcoin market. I'm probably butchering a description of it, but that's basically how I understand it. It's a online digital encrypted money. And currently a Bitcoin is trading for $2,727 just to get one. So when you talk about making purchases, people buy them in the 0.2s or the 0.01s, you know, little tiny bits at a time, right? So this comes up because of the recent story with Marijuana Policy Project. They've been banking at PNC Bank, which is, they've been banking at this bank since they were formed in 1995. And so this PNC Bank has come over and said, well, you know, it's a risk now because we know where your money comes from. We know that your money comes from the marijuana industry, people that make money buying and selling and moving weed. And so we're afraid that the big bad wolf, Jeff Sessions, is going to come over and blow our house down because we've been laundering drug money. Now, this had never been an issue before, right? Again, we're talking since 1995. So this bank went through 8 years of George W. Bush and wasn't scared enough to drop MPP's bank accounts. But now, under the Sling Blade Hobbit, they're running for the hills. They're scared to death that MPP, by promoting legalization and getting money from those who in their state make their money legally for marijuana could set them up to a risk. So there's an article on this Cointelegraph about, you know, U.S. cannabis group denied banking. Time for Bitcoin? Question mark. And it discusses, you know, how this might be a situation where these, you know, more and more of the cannabis industry groups are going to feel this pressure. It's like, all right, look, if you're not going to give us banking, we'll jump on the Bitcoin bandwagon. We'll just do it all digital cryptocurrency. How you like me now? Now, I, again, obviously don't know enough about Bitcoin to give you an informed opinion as to, like, is this a good idea? I can give you my reading of what experts are saying about this. Now, here's I'll give you a good one and a bad one, okay? A pro and a con. Should MPP, normal, DPA, and major cannabis groups, like the River Rock in Colorado and the big boys in Washington and Colorado and California, should they switch over? Maybe not switch over, but start to increase their use of cryptocurrency, things like Bitcoin. Is that a good idea? So here's one perspective, is a good story on this blog at cointelegraph.com. Alibaba would accept Bitcoin before Amazon, Google. Now, Alibaba, if you don't know what that is, Alibaba is a trading website out of China. It's basically how a lot of American companies are outsourcing their production through China and getting goods imported and exported out of China into China, back and forth. It's just basically an online hub for major industrial-sized Chinese manufacturing, I guess. I could be wrong on that, too. But anyway, Alibaba is considering joining up with starting to take Bitcoin. At least there was a survey done on this where over half of the people responding to the survey, 4,500 people responding, thought that Alibaba would be the first one to switch over to a cryptocurrency, to use a cryptocurrency. According to the Post, recent noises from the Alibaba ecosystem may well have informed the outcome, with a Japanese move set to make Bitcoin payments an indirect option for the site in the future. And Czech retail giant Alza revealed this week customers could even use the virtual currency to buy a Tesla electric car. So if we're getting these large industries signing on to Bitcoin, that bodes well, right? That bodes well for MPP and these other groups and the cannabis industry to switch over to a cryptocurrency, and that would, you know, increase its legitimacy if you got a big company like a Facebook or a Google or an Alibaba signing on to that. Now, on the other hand, another post, another post from today says, Bitcoin in 2017 has most elements of bubble, according to Forbes. Forbes has declared Bitcoin's 2017 price growth, quote, has most of the elements of a bubble, end quote, and will ultimately burst, drawing similarities with conventional financial asset bubbles. This expert writes that huge adopter interest will preclude a mass exodus, leaving hardly any value at all. Quote, investors who have been around Wall Street long enough know all too well that when money becomes tight and investment promises aren't fulfilled, bubbles and manias end, and millions made are lost much faster than they were made, and then some. And there has been talk in the cryptocurrency community that this price, as it approaches beyond $3,000 a Bitcoin, Vinny Lingham, a commentator on the issue, says above $3,000, and you're going to produce extreme volatility in Bitcoin. That bodes poorly for MPP switching over to Bitcoin. I'll read up on the subject, and I appreciate any sort of posts or commentary people can direct me to through our community page, which we're troubleshooting in our chat room. We're trying to figure out what's going on with that. When we return, we're going to talk about the fentanyl-laced marijuana rumor.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal Potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
And now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
Oh, hi everybody, it's me, Mr. Bell. Hey! And you know, when you're in the entertainment business, you have to be traveling coast to coast all the time.
Say, Mr. Bill, you've got a long trip ahead of you. You'll need something to help keep you awake.
Well, I've been really trying to cut down on my coffee lately.
Then how about some drugs?
Oh, no! Drugs are bad, and you kids out there should never, ever use them.
Oh, come on, try some. So remember, kids, say,
oh, no!
Do drugs.
To combat this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Marijuana Agenda every weekday at mjagenda.com.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the pharmaceutical agenda, without all the side effects, overdose, deaths, you know, insurance.
Side effects may include nausea, dry mouth, and constipation. Dry mouth, constipation, indigestion, and abdominal pain.
Which can occur without warning and may cause death.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the UK Cannabis Chronicle from the UK Cannabis Social Clubs. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death. Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind. If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face-to-face with the monster of marijuana, he'd drop dead of fright.
You know, it's not easy trying to debunk 80 years of anti-marijuana propaganda in a one-hour podcast, but let's try. It's time for the Marijuana Agenda's Reefer Madness Debunked.
All right, so we reported on the story that came out of WLWT television in Cincinnati, Ohio. A story that broke news on Monday about reports by the county coroner there in Hamilton County. That's Dr. Lakshmi Samarko, who stated that they'd had problems with marijuana laced with fentanyl being found in Cincinnati. With respect to the overdose deaths happening, the opioid crisis has rocked Cincinnati and the region, and that scare was drummed up that there's fentanyl-laced marijuana, and spokespeople told folks, don't do any street drugs, we don't know what's in them, you can never know what's in them, don't do the fentanyl-laced marijuana. And this story went viral. We saw it in news organizations across America and around the world. Hundreds of reports on the fentanyl-laced marijuana. Oh my God, the fentanyl-laced marijuana. Now, we've had this story before, and nobody's ever been able to produce any fentanyl-laced marijuana. Look, here's the bag. We took this bag of marijuana in to the lab, and the lab results show there's fentanyl on this marijuana. But the story went viral. The whole world got to talking about the dangerous fentanyl-laced marijuana. Just like we've heard the stories of the PCP-laced marijuana and the formaldehyde-laced marijuana and so forth. Now, that's not to say that some people might not do that. People might indeed do that. People mix drugs all the time. It's not to say that someone might not buy some fentanyl and some marijuana and use both or even combine both. It's entirely possible. The formaldehyde-dipped blunts, we've heard of all of that. People can do those things. The question is the marijuana being tampered with, the fentanyl put into it by the dealer, not by the user? And to that point, we never find any evidence that this has ever happened. So today, report comes out in the InsiderLouisville.com, one of these blogs, Insider Louisville, by Joe Sonka, just this morning with the headline, "No, people are not fatally overdosing on marijuana laced with fentanyl in this region." Contrary to reports by news organizations around the country, the Hamilton County Coroner's Office in Cincinnati tells Insider Louisville that they do not know of any cases in which a person has fatally overdosed by using marijuana that is laced with fentanyl, the powerful opioid that is at least 50 times more potent than heroin and causing a spike in overdoses in the region. The myth appears to have been started with a report by Cincinnati station WLWT, which covered a press conference held by Senator Rob Portman, the Republican for Ohio, and Hamilton County Coroner Dr. Lakshmi Samarko on Monday about the increasing threat of opioid addiction and overdoses. At that event, Samarko said that her office had seen fentanyl mixed with other drugs like cocaine and marijuana, which WLWT ran with the headline, "Hamilton County Coroner, we have seen fentanyl mixed with marijuana." Along with claiming, Samarko stated that synthetic opiates like fentanyl have been found in marijuana. Since that report was published, news organizations and websites across the country have run with the alarming headlines about marijuana supplies being laced with the deadly opioid fentanyl, including the Daily Caller and Salon, only serving to amplify similar rumors posted on social media. However, Andrea Hatton, an administrator with the Hamilton County Coroner's Office, tells Insider Louisville that WLWT misinterpreted the coroner's remarks and, quote, "created a lot of confusion," end quote. Hatton explained that the office runs blood screens as part of the autopsy process in suspected overdose cases, and they often find several different drugs in a person's system. But just because two different drugs are present does not mean they were taken together, as the original report had implied. Quote, "We in Cincinnati have not, in fact, seen fentanyl-laced marijuana. There are no reported cases of it," end quote. Jefferson County Coroner Barbara Weekly Jones also told Insider Louisville that she had not heard of any fentanyl-laced marijuana in Louisville. So, once again, we have this scare going viral. Like Mark Twain said, a lie is halfway around the world before the truth managed to get its pants on, right? Do you think this correction is going to go viral? Do you think this is going to be picked up by Salon, is going to be picked up by Daily Caller, going to be picked up by these news stations and Facebook posters around the country as much as the other one? At what point does this become the dreaded fake news? Like the one that the Pope had endorsed Trump that got hundreds more likes and forwards than the retraction that said that was bullshit. Yes, there are problems with fentanyl being laced into heroin. What people don't understand when they write these stories is that drugs do different things. There's a reason why there's not just one drug and people do that drug. There's lots of different drugs because people like different experiences, different flavors, different experiences. Fentanyl-laced marijuana would be as popular as pickle-laced chocolate chip cookies. Pickles are great. Don't get me wrong. Love pickles. Chocolate chip cookies are great. You don't really put the two together. They don't really work together. Fentanyl and marijuana don't... That's not what someone's looking for. Someone who's looking for fentanyl, wants opiate. Weed just gets in the way. Someone who wants weed certainly doesn't want fentanyl, doesn't want to be knocked out like that. They just want to get a little high. The ignorance of some of the media reporting on drug issues that can be so easily corrected by listening to this podcast, doing just a little bit of relationship building, of actually talking to drug users. And understanding why we consume what we consume. And to understand that if you're a dealer, the last thing you want to do, if you're a weed dealer, the last thing you want to do is push your clientele away by providing them a product that kills them. People that want marijuana like it because it's safer. They like it because it doesn't have the chance of killing them by an overdose. If four or five people drop off from a fentanyl-laced marijuana overdose, that dealer's done. People aren't buying his weed anymore. That makes no sense. Now, the heroin and the fentanyl makes a little sense because people are looking for that opiate high, and you could take cheap heroin and boost it with fentanyl. Sure, that makes some sense.
Well, Lottie frickin' God!
All right, that sound means it is 4:20 here in the Pacific time zone in the middle of a heat wave on a Friday in the summertime. Couldn't be much better. Oh, yes, it could. I could have a joint. Let me go take care of that. I'll be right back after this.
If you work in the cannabis industry, consume marijuana, or just support freedom, you need to know about breaking policy news that affects you. Marijuana Moment is the daily newsletter that helps you stay on top of all the latest and most important state, federal, and international cannabis developments. Brought to you by longtime legalization activist Tom Angel, Marijuana Moment puts a concise yet comprehensive overview of cannabis news in your inbox early every weekday morning. Wake up to Marijuana Moment and rest assured you'll be ready for the cannabis news that's driving the day. Subscribe now at marijuanamoment.net.
And now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
I helped murder families in Colombia.
It was just innocent fun.
I helped kidnap people's dads.
Hey, some harmless fun.
I helped kids learn how to kill.
I was just having some fun, you know.
I helped kill policemen.
I was just having fun.
I helped the bomber get a fake passport.
All the kids do it.
I helped kill a judge.
I helped blow up buildings.
My life, my body.
It's not like I was hurting anybody else.
To combat this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Marijuana Agenda every weekday at mjagenda.com.
The Marijuana Agenda. Like the liberal agenda, but with profits. Ka-ching.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine from the Burning Issues podcast on CannabisRadio.com. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Hello, Mr. Man. Hi. I'm working. I'm sorry. No food till this is done. It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back, everybody. I hope you had a great safety break. And no, this is not a cigarette. This is a joint. I got a machine. Rolled it nice and tight. I wanted to talk about the nation of Canada, because Canada has just released guidelines for the safer use of marijuana. This is from their health department. The Canadian Research Initiative on Substance Misuse. They released these guidelines about how to smoke pot safely. How to use pot safely. Dr. Benedict Fisher was the senior scientist at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health in Ontario. He led the development of these guidelines. He said, quote, "Factual science-based information can provide guidance to cannabis users to make choices that reduce both immediate and long-term risks to their health," end quote. So, let's take a look at these guidelines, which will impact numerous Canadians. 10% of adults and 25% of teens have said they've used marijuana in the past year in Canada. This should be legalized July of 2018, according to the timetables. So here are what the Canadian guidelines say. Avoid using marijuana at a young age. Using marijuana before age 16 increases the likelihood of developing health, educational, and social problems according to the guidelines. Therefore, people should avoid using pot in their teen years. In general, the later in life a person starts using cannabis, the lower their risks of problems will be. I think we can give that an okay. I think we're all right with that. I don't encourage anyone to smoke pot before the age of 18, unless, you know, there's a serious medical need for that. Now, I do have plenty of friends and colleagues who smoked pot at a very young age, 12, 13 years old, some even younger, and they seem to be functioning fine. But that again, I just, maybe a selection bias there. Given what I do and who I run into, I'm going to self-select. I'm going to run into the people who started smoking pot at age 12 and 13 who are doing okay, right? So I'm willing to accept that there's probably people out there who started really young and it didn't help them out much. Maybe it hurt them. Well, I think we can give that an okay. The second guideline, choose lower risk cannabis products. Products with high levels of tetrahydrocannabinol are more likely to be harmful to health, the guidelines say. However, cannabidiol, another compound in marijuana, may counteract some of the harms of THC. As such, products with high levels of CBD relative to THC may reduce some of the drug's risks, according to the guidelines. Yeah, I got to give a no, got a thumbs down on that. Although it's a close one, because some of this is all right. Like, high CBD to THC ratio can be a very good thing. But the idea that the high levels of THC are more harmful to health, you're stretching it a bit. That's like saying tequila is more harmful to your health than beer. Well, it depends on how much tequila you drink, and it depends on how much beer you drink. If you're drinking one shot of tequila a night versus a case of beer a night, the beer is more harmful to you. Similarly, if you were going to do 1 gram dabs, yeah, maybe you got to slow down on that a little bit. But if you're doing a dab a night to go to bed versus smoking bong loads all day, the dab is probably healthier for you. So I resist this idea that increased potency means increased harm. It may mean increased risk because of a more potent product, the likelihood that you might get more than you wanted is increased. I'll concede that. But consumed responsibly, shatter, hash, flower, high THC, low THC, they can all be done healthily. All right, their third guideline. Don't use synthetic cannabinoids. These products, sometimes called K2 or spice, are linked with serious side effects, including death. Yeah, all right. It's more true than not true. Yes, people have had some serious side effects from synthetic cannabinoids. Again, though, I think any drug can be used if you know what you're getting and you know what you're doing. There could be people out there for whom synthetic cannabinoids are going to be the only route that works for them. All right, their next health item. Avoid smoking cannabis. The traditional way of smoking cannabis, lighting it and letting it burn, can harm the lungs and respiratory system, especially when the cannabis being smoked is combined with tobacco. Alternative inhalation methods, such as vaporizers and e-cigarette devices, are less risky, but not risk-free, the guidelines say. Perhaps the safest way to use the drug is to choose marijuana edibles because they bypass lung-related risks, the guidelines say, noting that edibles are not risk-free either. What do we give this one overall? Yeah, I got to overall give that a no. Although there's some good stuff in there. Yes, if you have the choice and it works for you, vaporization is a healthier choice than smoking. That being said, I don't think smoking of cannabis is as unhealthy a choice as they make it sound. Harm the lungs and respiratory system. Nah, not much. Small cough. That's about it. We're not talking about people getting bronchitis and emphysema and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, that COPD. Now, the part they do say, especially when the cannabis is being smoked with tobacco combined, yes, that we can give a thumbs up to because, yes, everything about smoking cannabis with tobacco makes the tobacco worse. The flip side is that the tobacco makes the cannabis better. Nicotine helps the intake of THC and increases the length and the length and the intensity of the high of THC. That's why a lot of people like smoking blunts. And once they do, they don't like switching over back to just plain old flowers because they're not used to that jump start of the drug interaction between nicotine and THC. But THC, being a bronchodilator, opens up them lungs and lets that tar and all that nasty shit from the cigarette or from the tobacco get down in your lungs worse. So yeah, smoking blunts is a shortcut to the high, but it's also a gateway for the harm from the tobacco smoke. But this last part, perhaps the safest way to use the drug is to choose marijuana edibles because they bypass lung-related risks. Really? Like, you're evaluating the little tiny cough I might have. I got to cough up a little phlegm there. You're comparing that to someone taking an edible and possibly having a really intense bad trip, having a Maureen Dowd moment. One of the harm reduction values of smoking and or vaporization is that immediate effect, that immediate self-titration you get. Edibles, you don't get that. It's like rolling the dice when you're taking an edible. I'm really surprised they say that it could be safer than smoking, because I'm sorry, a little bit of a cough is nothing compared to a bad edible trip. I've had both. What else they got here? Avoid deep inhalation and breath holding. These practices increase the amount of toxic material absorbed by the lungs, the guidelines say. That is true. We've talked to Dr. Minch about this. THC is taken in by your red blood cells in your lungs and transported to the brain and across the blood-brain barrier. This happens quickly. Like, when you inhale, you take your hit, like, on the way in, the THC is being grabbed, right? You don't need to hold it like as if blood cells are in a line, you know, trying to get their little THC. Well, if I hold it for 15 seconds, then all the blood cells, hell, by the time you've held it 3 seconds, you've gotten all the THC out of it. You're not getting any gain by holding it longer than that. No reason to take these lung buster hits. All right, the next guideline, limit cannabis use. Using cannabis frequently, for example, every day or almost every day, is linked with higher risks of health and social problems. To lower their risks, marijuana users are advised to aim for occasional use, such as on weekends or one day a week at most, the guidelines say. I have to say, no. This is a bad default guideline to be giving out because, number one, there's all sorts of people who are medical cannabis patients for whom they need to be using all the time. And for two, look at me. My God, I'm running an Airbnb. I'm contributing to 5 different writing outlets. I do a 2-hour show every weekday. I'm soon going to be driving for Lyft. I travel the country and speak at events. I mean, and I accomplish this smoking marijuana every day multiple times. This can differ for different people, and this assumption that there's higher risks of social problems from frequent cannabis use is based on some junk science. It's when they take a look and they say, oh, all right, we're going to take a look at these people. Here's some people who smoked pot, and here's some people that didn't smoke pot. Well, look here. The people who smoke pot have lower scores on how happy they are with life. They have lower scores on how far they got in their education or how far they got in their career, and they have lower incomes and they have more incidences of health problems. And, oh, gee, look at all the terrible things marijuana smoking did. And what they failed to account for is that, one, as a pot smoker, you get dinged for your student loan. You get dinged for your next job from a P-test. The threat of a P-test or not taking a P-test or getting dinged from one is what prevents people from climbing those social ladders of education and career. And then you have the legal consequences that befall people and prevent them from getting better jobs and making better income. And then when people have part-time jobs, lower incomes, and perhaps a criminal record, they become more susceptible to health problems and less able to do something about it. So that's just plain old junk science when you're looking at this, you know, could lead to worse social outcomes. All right, next one. Next guideline. This is Canadian health guidelines for safer marijuana use. Don't drive or operate other machinery while under the influence of cannabis. Driving or operating machinery under the influence increases your risk of being involved in an accident. Users are advised to wait at least 6 hours after using the drug before driving or operating other machinery. We had to give three buzzers to that one. 6 hours? Get the fuck out of here, 6 hours. So basically you're saying, if a guy goes to work at 8 in the morning and he comes home at 5 at night, and when he gets home, he smokes a joint, he can't leave the house that the rest of the day. He can't leave the house the rest of the day, can't go nowhere the rest of the day. Are you kidding me? Come on now. How many times do we have to show the stat? Drivers with THC in their system are no more likely to be a crash risk than sober drivers. We just have the study that's up on the Normal blog right now. Most recent study showing that marijuana legalization does not lead to any impact in auto fatality rates. The other backup study on that, lower crash rates, yada, yada, yada. But even if we do concede that a newbie who smokes a joint might be too high to drive and might make the stupid decision to try to, that in no way tells us that it's unsafe for people who are regular cannabis consumers who have developed tolerance and who are quite aware and responsible and know when they are or not stoned to be able to drive. And you cannot put this in front of me. Now, I know in America it's a legal drug. I'm betting it's in Canada it's a legal drug. That there's Marinol, pure THC, no CBD. Remember the earlier point. The earlier point about the THC-CBD balance, more CBD would be a good thing. There is a legal drug called Marinol that's all THC, no CBD. Anybody in Canada or United States can get it. If a doctor prescribes it for them, it's completely legal. And on that drug's warning label, it says, do not drive or operate heavy machinery until you know how Marinol may affect you. The implication being, once you do know, use your best judgment. So no, I cannot get behind a safety guideline that says don't operate heavy machinery within 6 hours of smoking pot. Give me a break. All right, we got another one here. Canadian health guidelines for safer marijuana use. Avoid marijuana use if you are pregnant or at increased risk for problems that could result from your use of the drug. People who have a history of psychosis or substance use disorder or have a family member who does should avoid using marijuana because they are at higher risk of mental health problems from the drug. Pregnant women should not use the drug because it could harm their fetus or infant, the guidelines say. Yeah, we got to give two buzzers for that one. First of all, do not use marijuana if you're pregnant because it could harm your fetus. That's why the Rastafarians died out. That's why there's no more Jamaican kids. That's why Willie Nelson, Tommy Chong, and Bob Marley have a combined 24 children. We're all highly dysfunctional, unaccomplished, unintelligent people. Sure. Yeah. If there were some serious harm from marijuana use to the fetus, you'd have seen the results. We'd have a whole generation of kids born of the baby boomers that would have serious problems. And it didn't happen. We didn't have that wave. We didn't see that happen. Tired of this scaremonger about pregnant women. Now, should a pregnant woman be doing 1 gram dabs and, you know, massive gravity bong rips every couple hours? Yeah, probably not. But really more from the smoke than the THC. Really more from the carbon monoxide and stuff is probably not as good for the fetus. But for many pregnant women, the option of cannabis is going to be a better option to treat whatever might be ailing them, from morning sickness to pain. Anxiety, nausea might be a better treatment for them than the pharmaceuticals that doctors would provide. Might be less harmful to the fetus. And this part about history of psychosis or substance use disorder, there is correlation there. Absolutely, there's correlation there. But I think it's a sad guideline to say that someone who might have had a dad who is an alcoholic, who might struggle with alcohol themselves, couldn't make the safer choice to use cannabis instead to alter their perceptions. I know anecdotes aren't evidence, but that's my life. I never had a decent handle on alcohol until I started using marijuana. I used to get pass out, blackout, get in fights, drunk. Until I started smoking marijuana, it was able to allow me to moderate and to have a little more impulse control and not feel the need or even want to be in that state anymore. And if someone has had a history of psychosis or schizophrenia or any of those things, yes, it's probably not a good idea to be smoking pot. But also, I've known people who have managed to treat themselves through smoking pot, treat those very problems smoking pot. So I don't know that it's necessarily a statement we can 100% make a blanket safety statement here. And their final item here is avoid combining risks. The greater number of risky pot behaviors a person engages in, the higher the risks their harm will be. The guidelines say don't start in your teens and use it every day while you're driving a car and holding your breath with high THC products, I guess. Thanks, Canada. We'll have some more Canada stories when we come back from the break.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
And now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
Call it what you want. It's all the same. I'm here to tell you that marijuana...
Are they still trying to feed us that junk about weed?
Well, maybe you need to listen, girl. You may not be an addict on the streets, but like my cousin Derek, he sure got hung up on it.
And girls, let me tell you, smoking it can really mess up your lungs.
And you can stop caring about stuff, like school, like your friends.
Well, I can see I'm in the wrong place.
She's headed for a whole lot of trouble.
To combat this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Marijuana Agenda every weekday at mjagenda.com.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
Learn more at mjagenda.com.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every Friday for the Reefer Rock Review with Herb Thrasher from 420radio.org. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Shanna, your head to David, PKA Dirtball.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back, everyone. We got another story coming out of Canada, looking to legalize Canada in summer of 2018, just a little more than a year from now. We could have legal marijuana all across the northern border of America. and the story we just told you about Canada, we follow this one up after talking about their safety use guidelines, which we're not so sure how safe all of them are, but The latest Canadian story is that there may not be enough pot in Canada. This is coming out of Bloomberg Politics, so it's pretty serious mainstream publication. The finance minister of Canada, Ontario's Charles Souza, said they discussed a supply crunch. There's a meeting between federal and provincial officials looking at, hey, all right, we're going to have legal weed in a year. What do we got to worry about here? And one analyst said he's concerned the program could use a supply shortage as an excuse to delay rolling out the program. Souza said, quote, ultimately, the biggest problem that appears after today's discussion is one of supply. Finance ministers were told demand is quite high for marijuana already in Canada. Quote, so we want to make certain that when we do proceed, there is a sufficient supply to accommodate the activity, because what we're trying to do is curb the illicit use and organized crime that now exists around it. Now, we know what happens when you have an initial shortage. We saw this happen in Washington State when they rolled out legalization in 2012 and didn't have all the producers licensed, and it was just a big bottleneck waiting for any product to hit the shelves, and prices were around $33 a gram. So this is a, you don't want to start off with super expensive prices like that, because you turn off your initial customer base to the idea that legal marijuana is something they want to be a part of. There has been an increase in the inventories of licensed producers. This is through their medical marijuana program. They've been doing well at boosting that. They've got 167,000 registered medical marijuana patients as of March 31st. And the worry is that if there is this shortage, that the regulators are going to say, all right, well, let's not do it in July. Let's push it back to October. Let's push it back to November. Wait till after harvest. And that just means more arrests, more shutdowns of dispensaries, more arrests and seizures from growers. The companies out there, like Organigram, are pumping out 6,000 kilograms annually, are going to reach up to 26,000 kilograms by the end of 2018. And that's not going to be anywhere near enough. The market analyst, Cam Mingay, who's a senior partner at Castles Brock, says, I don't know what anyone can do about it. You can't force the plants to grow faster. You could approve 50 more companies tomorrow, and realistically, they could probably be in production by the end of 2018 in any meaningful capacity. So, and then there's the delay time of issuing licenses and the bureaucratic, back and forth of mailing this one in and mailing that one in and so forth. We're talking about a transition that could take, up to 5 years to get Canada fully rolling. I mean, Washington State legalized in 2012, end of 2012. So 2013 is the first year they're beginning to get rolled out. They roll out with $600 ounces, $700 ounces if you work up the gram price, right? What is it now, 2017, and they're down below around $9 a gram? So it took 4 years, I guess, 4 years to finally get the production end built up. You do have to wait for the plants to grow. Interesting problem. And the other thing that this will hurt, right, is that, once Canada legalizes weed, you're going to have Americans who live in those northern border states, North Dakota, Minnesota, Michigan, right, New York, Vermont, Maine, who might want to run across the border into Canada and experience legalized marijuana, but not if it's going to be super expensive. And so Canada's going to miss out on that initial wave of tourist purchase that some of the United States have gotten when they legalize marijuana. That's interesting to me. That's just really an interesting situation going on there in Canada. Who'd have thought there'd not be enough weed in Canada? I remember when I was coming up in the 80s and 90s, everybody always talked about the legendary BC Bud, British Columbia Bud, right? Oh, the BC Bud. This guy's got some BC Bud, man. And now it's like, I don't know anybody that has or cares or wants BC Bud. So anyway, one other story I want to get to, we've been talking about this generally about how marijuana legalization, one of the unintended, well, can't say unintended, maybe one of the less focused on side effects of marijuana legalization is a certain kind of gentrification that happens as you get this boom industry that comes in and brings in a lot of jobs and a lot of money and starts changing neighborhoods and raising rents. I know the rent that I'm paying here in Portland, Oregon has doubled since I've lived here. I've only lived here 14 years, 13, 14, something like that. And it's just growing quickly. Well, there's a story in the Oregonian now that about industrial rents in Denver, Seattle, Portland. And we've seen how all of the, like the warehouse spaces are, you can't get them. All the big grow operations are taking up all these warehouses. And so other businesses that need warehouse space, they can't afford that stuff. They have to raise their prices to be able to afford some warehouse somewhere else. Maybe it's farther away. Now they got more transportation costs. That raises their prices. Prices in the area go up, generally speaking. Rents for houses and all go up too. So they're talking in this story about how Los Angeles and Boston, they're moving on now to marijuana legalization. And boy, what you saw happen in Portland, Denver, and Seattle, we start talking about LA and Boston losing warehouse space. The going price for industrial real estate in Denver, Seattle, and Portland have grown faster than in cities where the substance is still banned. This is according to research from CoStar Group, Inc. It tracks data on commercial properties. It expects the trend to continue in cities in California, Maine, Massachusetts, and Nevada. Denver rents rose 33% from first quarter 2014 to May 2017. Industrial rents in Seattle and Portland each rose 27% in the same period. That compares with 19% gains in the other 54 largest U.S. markets. Again, we're serious about this, how it's just going to drive up your cost of living for sure. And Renee Cirk from CoStar says, cannabis is the first industry in a long time to have such a clear impact. Quote, it's had a tremendous positive impact on rents and property values for the markets where this has been legalized. Taking the experiences from the markets that have been at this for a few years, the suggestion is this will have a positive impact in these new markets. End quote. They also have been picking smaller buildings that are traditionally less desirable, and part of the reason for that is cultivating marijuana has inherent fire risks. Smaller spots are easier to guard, easier to set up sprinklers, easier to set up cameras than a big, massive building. So that further pinches these smaller companies, non-marijuana companies, that are looking for warehouse space that can't afford the big-ass warehouse. They only need a small spot, but they can't get that small spot because the growers are tending toward those. It's a fascinating story. And of course, we know cannabis is projected by Cowan and Company in this story to be a $50 billion market by 2026. I know it's driving up the prices here in Portland, Oregon, that's for sure. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will close up shop with a interesting story about a New Zealand girl building up immunity to a cannabis-based medication. Maybe she could use some entourage effect.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hey everybody, it's Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
And now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, The Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
Hey, Ellen, want a hit? want to smoke a joint before trying this on?
Here you go, Ellen. You want to get high? We got some great Thai stick in the back.
Smoke. Smoke. Kind buds. Sensi.
You're gonna love this stuff. It'll get you really high.
To combat this sort of reefer madness, listen to The Marijuana Agenda every weekday at mjagenda.com.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the Cannabis Minority Report from the Minority Cannabis Business Association. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
I have a package here for Radical Rick. Is there a Radical Rick here? How about a Rick Russ? Any Rick Russ? Somebody named Freddie Barak has sent him a package? Anybody? What is that? Sounds like a skunk.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back, everyone. And as we close up shop, we've got an interesting story coming to us out of New Zealand. From the New Zealand Herald, girl builds immunity to cannabis-based medication. She's a 9-year-old named Zoe Jeffries. She takes Sativex or Sativex, which is legal there in New Zealand. For her severe seizure, she suffers from uncontrolled epilepsy, spastic quadriplegia, cerebral palsy, microcephaly, cerebral visual impairment, and has had severe seizures since birth. She got Sativex in 2015 when she was 7. That was after a 2-year process that they had started. So they started trying to get this drug for her when she was 5. Takes 2 years. They get her when she's 7. She's had it since then. It did well for her. She was went from constant sedation to a bubbly, responsive child. She started taking it in 2015. Problem is, according to her mother, quote, she's just built up a bit of an immunity to it in the last few weeks, which means she's not doing so well. She hasn't been coping well at school, so she has had the last 2 weeks off. The seizures are a bit stronger, and because the school doesn't have nurses equipped to deal with that, it's better to keep her at home, end quote. So keep in mind that the Sativex that she has to buy is $1,000 a month. $1,000 a month to buy the Sativex. And so they couldn't afford this. It's the members of the community have been donating. I don't know if it's a GoFundMe or something, but people have been donating to help her get this medication at $1,000 a month. And so what she might have to do, what, take a stronger dose, more of it, then it costs more, even more than $1,000 a month for this Sativex. And I believe part of the immunity she's built up has to do with the fact that she's not getting the entourage effect. She's not getting whole plant medication. She's not getting actual cannabis oil that would help her. She's getting this pharmaceutical preparation of it, of CBD and THC. This is, put the girl on a whole plant cannabis regimen and let's see what happens. Can't be any worse than what's happening to her now as the Sativex is starting to wear off. But number two, it ain't going to cost the family a goddamn $1,000 a month. What the hell? Who can even think that that is a rational way of dealing with this little girl's seizures, with her quadriplegia? Oh, man, the lengths that we will go to try to stop someone from growing a plant in their backyard and gaining some euphoria off of inhaling its smoke. We'll let this little 9-year-old girl descend back into severe disability. by the time it got. Thanks for joining us, folks. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com. You take a seat, you're ready. You're growing, you're giant, you're rolling, you're strong, yeah. You take a seat, you're ready.